proceed to case number six, please. Old Town Association versus Alan Krupp.
Thank you. May it please the court, the counsel. My name is Michael Wookmer, and I have the privilege this morning of representing before you the Honorable Alan Kaufman, the mayor of the city of Goshen, who appeals a preliminary injunction that was erroneously entered that prevents the city of Goshen from completing a desperately needed, long overdue project to improve and expand a local road until certain requirements of a federal statute or several statutes have been met.
Council, where is the federal government in this? They were listed as parties in the district court, and you say that any relief properly is against the federal government, but they haven't filed a brief, and indeed, so far as I could tell, you haven't even served them. What's up?
The federal government, you're right, Judge, that the city of Goshen stands alone before this court today, separate and apart from both the federal government and the state of Indiana, who chose not to.
Did you serve them with a copy of your notice of appeal?
Absolutely.
Certainly did not serve them with copies of your brief. They're parties to this case.
Yes, they have received copies of our brief.
Your certificate of service does not list service on the federal government.
We can amend that, but they did receive copies of our briefs. But we do stand alone before you today, as does Goshen's Third Street.
Maybe we need to direct them to file a brief. One would think they have a vital interest in the outcome of this case.
Well, that's a good point, Judge, and the reason why they don't is because Third Street is not their project.
But you say that, but of course the district court...
I don't know what they say.
Right, there is a lot of history which is reviewed in enormous detail in this 60-page opinion from the district court about U.S. Highway 33 and what exactly the scope of this project is. Perhaps it's, as you say, an utterly isolated thing that could have been in the middle of Girdwood, Alaska, for all we care. Or perhaps it's an overall project of which it could have been a part and of which it was a part for a long time that got eventually sealed off.
Okay, and then
one could see it, and there's evidence, including emails, meetings, letters, minutes, that maybe it was part of something bigger, and Highway 33 was going to be rerouted, and other things of significant federal interest might have happened.
With due respect, we do not believe the evidence shows that the two projects were ever combined. Even Judge Hamilton stated that the projects were kept formal.
They were kept formally separate, he says. I mean, I certainly don't need to tell you what Judge Hamilton said, but he, at this preliminary injunction stage, and I think it's quite important that it is a preliminary injunction stage, has found that they were, if it were, functionally one project.
Well, Judge, that I don't believe he's found that they were functionally one project. In fact, if I may, I've posted up for you Exhibit 72.
We've seen that in the brief, too.
And what it shows is that the federal project begins here and goes all the way and ends here. This Third Street project was the city of Goshen.
Well, that's your view. I don't know how we're in any position to second-guess the district judge's findings of fact. I mean, I thought you were making a legal argument that even if all, at least in addition, that even if everything the district court found was correct, the only relief that is permissible under these statutes runs against the federal government.
I don't know if the plaintiffs have a claim against the federal government or not. I know that the city of Goshen is not the federal government, and the statutes which are at issue here today specifically require the federal government to take action.
I understand that. That would be your legal argument.
Yes.
Even if every factual finding of the district court is absolutely true, the right person to be subject to relief under these statutes is the federal agency. But then that leads to my puzzle, where's the federal agency?
You're right, if they were going to join in there. file a brief?
Yes, they respectfully declined to participate, as well as the state of Indiana.
I believe they never filed a statement with this court.
There's no such statement filed with this court.
Correct.
There is no indication in the records of this court that they have ever been served with your notice of appeal or with your briefs. The certificates of service, which I have looked at, do not list service on the federal government.
I apologize. I don't know what the record shows, but at the district
court, that's what the record shows.
When the notice of appeal was filed and was served upon them, we've had discussions with them. They respectfully declined to participate. And I cannot, again, the city of Goshen doesn't control what the federal government does. And that's part of the point of what this case is. We are hamstrung in our project because we can't proceed. The court has ordered the city of Goshen to stop the work on its project until the federal government takes certain action. And one of the questions we are faced with is, what if the federal government doesn't do anything, ever? Because this project, the U.S. 33 project, which is the state's project, which has been languishing for 10 years, is at its preliminary stages. They're just beginning the environmental assessment project.
Yeah, but then we would have something in writing from them if we ordered them to come in and have them say, we don't want to participate. We have no interest.
And I can't answer for why they have not filed something.
You can proceed with your argument, and we will take up this matter subsequently, immediately after the argument.
Yes, and I'd be happy to issue whatever additional documentation is necessary to show that we have properly served them with our notice of appeal. But the point is that Goshen does stand alone here today, and the order prohibits Goshen from proceeding with this project based upon what the district court has found to be a tacit agreement. The district court acknowledges in its opinion that this is a local project. It was conceived, planned, designed, built, paid for entirely by the city of Goshen, the federal government, and the Third Street project had absolutely no control, had absolutely no influence, and under the laws of each of the circuits that we've cited, those are the determining factors to determine whether or not a non-federal actor can be bound to federal statutes.
But that's not quite what the district court has found. The problem, I think, suppose you had a little chunk of road in some town, and the federal government was thinking, to be even more extreme, of running an interstate highway through that particular area, and the town also was thinking of doing something with it. The town really can't just rush ahead and do this thing at the same time the federal government is considering doing it, or at least, you'd have a conflict of projects. Here you do have a problem, because if this is really going to be part of the U.S. Highway 33 revision, then you can spend all the money you want and this historic neighborhood will be ripped up twice, because then NDOT will come in and the federal government, the Federal Highway Administration will come in and perhaps completely redo what you've done. An enormous waste of public money to everybody. They have that power. And one of the things the district court says is, if you go ahead and do this, you are, in a sense, channeling the discretion of the federal government as to what options are sensible for U.S. Highway 33. You don't agree with that. I understand you've made that clear in your brief, but I'm saying the district court makes comments to that effect.
And the federal government and the state of Indiana have made it very clear that they have no interest in taking over the Third Street project.
The district court makes some pretty devastating credibility findings about what the woman from NDOT was representing all along the way. He expressly finds her testimony not credible on two occasions.
But she was not the only testimony on that issue. There was each one of the supposed participants, including Mayor Kaufman, who's been a longtime advocate of historical properties in Goshen, was elected to solve the traffic problem. I said, I'm going to enact a thoroughfare plan that the city council has put in place, and his number one priority was Third Street, and I'm going ahead with that. He made no bones about it, that he would like it to be a federal project, that he wanted it to be a federal project. He overzealously, perhaps, even sold it. They never bought it. And one piece of evidence, which the judge ignored in his conclusion that there was a tacit agreement, was exhibit number 64, which was a letter from the Department of Natural Resources, which acknowledged that NDOT has formally declined to accept ownership of 3rd Street and relinquish U.S. 33 Main Street to the city of Goshen.
Let me ask you a question. Under the injunction as issued by the district court judge, what do you envision the status quo is being preserved? What's it being preserved for? The judge says, pending further court order or full compliance, and he lets you stabilize and stuff like that. What could happen? Are you free, as you understand it right now, to argue that when the facts are finally resolved, it will be concluded that this really is a local project, it's not something that's being impermissibly segmented off a bigger federal project? Or do you think the only option the judge has left you is to comply with these statutes?
It's a great question, because we can't comply with the statutes. The city of Goshen,
what?
We cannot comply with the statutes. We are a local agency, and a local agency cannot conduct a review that's being requested. Only the federal government can do that, and we can't make them. And interestingly, the judge, Judge Hamilton, did not force the federal government to go ahead with it. He just said, when you do that, you'll do this as a part of it. And we're just kind of left holding the bag. When is the federal government going to do it?
It's a preliminary injunction. He's enjoining Mary Peters in her official capacity as administrator of the Federal Highway Administration, John Baxter from the Indiana Division of the Federal Highway Administration, and Brian Nichols. So I assume they're subject to this injunction if they were served at the outset of the lawsuit.
They are certainly subject to this injunction.
They,
however, it doesn't enjoin them to do it.
Comply with, well, they
don't
have to
do anything
for further court order or full compliance with 106 and 110. I take it that at least second branch, full compliance with 106 and 110 is open to them. Right?
If the judge ordered them to do something, it would be a different situation.
We're
waiting for them.
Well, they gave copies to the U.S. attorney. He gives them at least an option. And if they want to come in and ask him for a different option, I suppose they can. But he has, Sue Hendricks Bailey, Office of the U.S. Attorney, is on the list of people who got copies of this injunction.
Oh, when they were there.
All right. Go ahead. Is there anything else you want to add?
I'd like to save the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
Fine. Counsel?
Yes, please, the court. My name is Jan Carroll. I'm here on behalf of Old Town Neighborhood Association and Historic Landmarks. To Judge Easterbrook's point, where is the federal government in this? This has been a federal partnership from day one. If you look at the thoroughfare plan, which Judge Hamilton referenced...
Where is the federal government's brief? And the federal government, one would think, is the cornerstone of this case, because NEPA imposes duties only on the federal government, and the other act, the Historic Preservation Act, imposes duties also only on the federal government. Both statutes say that federal officials shall do such and such. They don't say anything about what state officials shall do. And it's a puzzle, to me, how the district court can enter an order against a state or local official, and the federal official, who's in charge of carrying out these acts, is gone missing.
Well, Your Honor, I have to say that I have no control over the federal government any more than my colleague, Mr. Wuckmer. But I will say that...
You didn't bother to serve your brief on the federal government either.
I beg to differ, Your Honor. We serve them. Look at the proof of service. We served every single party, including outside counsel hired by NDOT. So...
Hired by who?
NDOT.
Which is what?
The Indiana Department of...
Say it in English?
Yes, sir. Indiana Department of Transportation,
right,
for which...
I'm not completely off on everybody's acronyms.
All right. That Brian Nichols is in his representative capacity. So we did, in fact, sue every party to the district court. And functionally, this case is no different than the Scottsdale Mall case, where I would note that...
Let me ask my question directly. Let's not worry about the federal government being here. Let's start with NEPA. NEPA says that the federal government, head of the federal agency, shall include on every, with every recommendation or report, on a proposal for major federal action, an environmental impact statement. What is the recommendation or report on a proposal for major federal action that is missing the required statement?
There is no recommendation because they have failed to act.
Well, then how can there be a violation of NEPA?
Well, we should not...
Let me tell you why I asked this question particularly. I have in mind the case of Pleppy against the Sierra Club, which was another case in which a court of appeals said, gee, you really should have covered a larger project than the segmented project that was at issue. The Supreme Court reversed and said, until the federal agency prepares a recommendation or report, the courts have no power whatsoever to require an environmental impact statement. None. Now, your brief doesn't discuss Kleppe against Sierra Club, maybe understandably because the other side doesn't discuss Kleppe against Sierra Club. But given Kleppe against Sierra Club, what basis is there for any NEPA relief here?
Well, Your Honor, that ignores a long line of cases in this circuit, the 10th, the 4th, the 6th, and the 5th, saying
as
that there is...
As the 10th Circuit and the Supreme Court, we follow the Supreme Court.
I understand, Your Honor, but I'm just making the point that if you are now to find that there is no cause of action under NEPA against non-federal actors, you will be effectively reversing 40 years of law.
Counsel, listen to my question again and answer what I asked. I asked how your position is consistent with a holding that until there is a recommendation or report on a proposal for major federal action, there's no need for an EIS. It may be that once there is such a recommendation or report, the court can decide whether it was broad enough and maybe can issue ancillary relief against non-federal parties. The question that concerns me is, what can a court do before there has been a recommendation or report?
And the answer to your question, with due respect, Judge Easterbrook, is exactly what the district court did. Because Congress having taken...
How is that consistent with Kleppe against Sierra Club and the language of NEPA?
Because the court recognized, the district court recognized, that Congress having taken...
There are two ways you can answer my question. You can answer it in terms of the Supreme Court's opinion in Kleppe against Sierra Club, or you can answer it in terms of the language of NEPA. I would be happy to have you answer in either of those terms.
Well, with respect to the way you posed it, there is no way to reconcile that. However, it assumes the foolish result that we are going to do away with years of segmentation cases.
We are not going to ignore both the Supreme Court and the language of NEPA. You really need to reconcile your position with them. Now, maybe there's a way to do that, and that's what I'm hoping you can provide me with.
Well, Your Honor, I'm
not saying ignore the language of the statute. It's going to work.
And I'm not suggesting you do that. What I am suggesting is that if I could draw an analogy, because I don't have anything directly on point. When the Supreme Court in McLean versus Huddleston and later in Merrill Lynch versus Curran said, look, the issue is whether there's an implied cause of action under 10b-5 and the Commodities Exchange Act. And it talked about how there's a long, long line of federal case law recognizing that there was such an implied right of action, and how the Supreme Court said we assumed without really discussing it in another case that there was. And in those two cases, the Supreme Court said, look, it's too late, there's too much water gone under the bridge for us to now say
it's
there's no implied cause of action.
It's never too late for us to carry out express decisions of the Supreme Court of the United States. Kleppe against Sierra Club overturned the kind of line of appellate precedent to which you're referring. That was why Secretary Kleppe took it to the Supreme Court. Our job is to implement their decisions. Now, if there's a way to reconcile your position with the Supreme Court's view of NEPA, please, but just saying ignore the Supreme Court, do what the Ninth Circuit did in pre-Kleppe days, won't work. Right? Well, that's why I want your views.
That's right, Your Honor, and I would never suggest that you should disregard the Supreme Court. But this is not only a NEPA case. We sued under the Historic Preservation Act and also under the Transportation Act. both of which provide a basis for Judge Hamilton's preliminary injunction.
The statutes, as I read them, say that the Secretary shall not provide federal funds without making certain findings. And there's no, there's said to be no federal funds here.
I beg to differ, Your Honor. The exhibit that I believe is Exhibit 108, which is in the record, that shows the federal funds being obligated and authorized for the Third Street project. Now, that is
still a different way. One would think that if the statute says no federal funds without making such a finding, that in the event the statute is violated, the injunction would say to the federal agent, spend no federal funds until you've made this finding. It wouldn't be an injunction running against some third party saying you are forbidden to spend your own funds, although that's what this injunction does.
It does, and with due respect, an injunction such as you described would essentially be moot and meaningless, because what is the point of evaluating the impact on the human environment and on historic preservation of an expenditure if someone has run out and expended private funds or local funds to do that? And
that's just the point of the statute. The statute says no federal funds to do X. That doesn't imply no state funds to do X or no local funds to do X. Now, it might be, you see, if the district court is worried that this is just a two-step, first the local government's going to do it, and then the feds later are going to say, the historic landmark has been demolished, we're now going to come in and swap out, right? One could easily imagine the district court prohibiting that, prohibiting ever any federal reimbursement, prohibiting ever any federal swap of lands, anything that serves as de facto reimbursement. But that's not what this injunction does either.
No, it doesn't.
It says no local funds can be expended until the federal government has made a finding under 4F. But there's never any need for a finding under 4F for spending local funds. It's just not what it's about.
Well, that ignores the finding of the tacit agreement. And the court found in detail, found the facts of the tacit agreement.
I don't want to badger you unduly, but you're not responding to my worry. My worry is that if the federal statute says no federal funds, then if the problem is that there's a tacit agreement to spend federal funds, you issue an injunction against the federal officer saying don't spend them directly, don't spend them indirectly, don't spend them later, don't spend them in a disguised way, but you don't say because no federal funds can be spent now or ever, no local funds can be spent now or ever.
No local funds can be spent to create what is fundamentally a federal project, and for which there's a tacit agreement to swap. If you look at it, even after the decision was made to do this accounting maneuver and say, okay, MACON, take the federal funds that have been authorized and obligated for my project that will connect up with US 33 in Goshen, at the south end and at the north end, even then, when plans were hastily drawn, those plans were still based on federal requirements and meeting federal standards. Further underlying what Judge Hamilton said, that this was simply a tacit agreement, kind of like build it and they will come, as in Field of Dreams. So having found that, the most effective thing that Judge Hamilton did was to say, look, we're not going to proceed with this project. It's clearly a federal project and involves major federal action, and you shall not proceed until those requirements are met.
Well, that's what he said, or did he say until some of these questions are resolved? Because it seems to me if Goshen was willing to enter into the kind of stipulation Judge Easterbrook is talking about, saying never, ever, 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 ever will we take a federal nickel. This will never become part of U.S. 33. It will never change. Then, you know, that would leave the federal government with the only option, perhaps, to build the bypass route or something. There are other things it might do with the highway. But I was still curious about what's open to the federal government now that the status quo has temporarily been preserved. What are we waiting for? What's it being preserved for?
Well, if I could circle back to the first part of your question, it does not necessarily depend on federal funds in the future. For example, a license or permit redesignating the completed Third Street as U.S. 33 is a sufficient federal action to implicate the required historic preservation.
Well, that's the swap option, you know, the tax agreement to swap all of this, playing accounting games, which I can certainly understand implicates the federal government.
But to get to your question, Judge, what the federal government does now is what it is doing now, and I take some liberty by saying, and I don't think Mr. Workman will contradict me, that the federal government and NDOT, the state of Indiana, Department of Transportation, which is the designee of federal highway, has actually proceeded with meetings under Section 106, albeit under the ambit of U.S. 33. But you can't separate, and I think that the district court found that you could not separate the Third Street project, which was conceived, planned, and intended to be a route for the federal highway system, taking truck traffic from the south side of Goshen up through Third Street and then out to the north and west, or vice versa. So that being the case, what the city can do is to do what it has done. It has been very vocal in lobbying and trying to persuade Federal Highway and the Department of Transportation, NDOT, to proceed expeditiously with the type of reviews that are required. Now, until we're preserving the status quo for a trial on the merits, the City of Goshen and the federal government, and NDOT for that matter, have the ability on a full trial to say, look, based on the preliminary record, this is what you decided, but facts are different, and so there should be no permanent injunction. I don't think that's going to happen. But until that does happen, the district court was within its rights to issue the preliminary injunction based on the evidence that he found.
Right.
Thank you.
2 minutes, sir. The answer to when NEPA should be triggered is found in the appellee's brief on page 46, footnote 16.
I apologize.
Footnote 16, it says, standing alone, the redesignation of Third Street meets the major federal action requirements. That's what would trigger NEPA. The federal government has not done that. When the federal government does take some kind of action, it will then have to go through the process of notice, investigation, inquiry, all of that. It's never happened. Regarding what's happening right now, the federal government is ignoring Third Street. The state of Indiana is ignoring Third Street.
Well, would you be happy with an injunction of the sort that I described? An injunction limited to the federal government, and which would say, no federal funds without doing this, without prior compliance, and if Third Street is redeveloped first, no ex post reimbursement, because it would be a totally unacceptable two-step to say, the state has destroyed the historic landmarks, and now the federal government under 4F certifies, gee, the historic landmarks are rubble, so we can spend the federal funds now. And that would obviously be a sham.
That would be the appropriate injunction, and in fact that is the law, because since the project being constructed and because there hasn't been an environmental impact study done, the city of Goshen is foreclosed from ever receiving federal funds for that project.
Ever receiving any value in some different way?
Any swap, any use for a different
plan,
county
swap
project?
Swap federal funds. That would be prohibited.
Well, that would start a NEPA process.
No, it would have to be prohibited because
prohibited.
This is all that happened.
Done. Forever.
Okay. And that's a hypothetical that...
It's not a hypothetical. We're asking you if you would be happy with that relief. That's the alternative to the relief the district court entered.
I can't answer that question, but that's for Judge Hamilton to decide. If that's the relief that he had entered, we would certainly look at
the case is right here, now, right? It seems to me there are two possible outcomes. One is affirmance, and the other might be remand on the terms I've just described.
It would seem, yes,
That is one possible outcome. The other possible outcome would be to say, if Goshen must go through the hurdles of meeting the federal statutes, then in fact the federal government must redesignate U.S. 33, or Third Street as U.S. 33. There has to be a quid pro quo. We either get it or we don't.
But what if the federal government goes through all those hurdles and decides that the bypass option is the one it wants to fund, and then says to Goshen, go and do, you know, bulldoze every building on Third Street if you want to. We don't care about these old Indiana things.
And that is precisely why the injunction entered now is inappropriate, because it's completely speculative right now what the federal government's going to do or the state government's going to do.
There is a notion of irreparable injury, though, because once they're gone, they're gone. They can't be restored.
This isn't about tearing down any buildings, though.
I thought there were 6 buildings that were going to have to be raised in order to do the sweep of the project.
That part of the project is already done, and we've restored.
Those buildings are history. That's great.
There's actually one house, the City of Goshen, moved to preserve it. The others, the Department of Natural Resources said, just document them. You can tear them down because they have no historical significance other than documentation effect. So this is about widening the road is what this is about.
The court will take this case under advisement.
Thank you.
Thank you.